You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, welcome to the Paranormal Portal podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful night, and thank you so much for tuning in and supporting all that we're doing here on the podcast. It's been amazing. You guys have been amazing out there checking us out and subscribing and downloading, and it's just a real pleasure. Of course, I'm your host, Brent Thomas. This is the Paranormal Portal podcast, and once again, special thanks to Revolver Podcast for making all this possible. Let's get into it. We got some stories pulled up for you tonight, and I hope you guys enjoy it. I think they're good. I didn't really read them ahead of time, but that's the way we always do it. But the first one I'm going to read you tonight comes out of the state of Kentucky, and it's from 2007, so it's a while ago. But we'll see what happened in 2007 in Kentucky. We lived in this home, and I'm going to tell you about the place first. When you come in the front door, you had the living room, and on the right was the kitchen, and on the left was a hallway. You go through the hall, on the right is one bedroom, and the next on the right was the bathroom, and then the big bedroom. You go back to where the kitchen is, and there is a hallway on the left and is a bedroom, and then across from the bathroom is a back door on the right. There is a washer and dryer, and then another bedroom. It's a pretty sprawling place. One night, me and my kids were in our living room watching television, and I look back to where my room was, and I saw the hall light on. I went and turned it off and came back and sat down. And when I sat down, my son said, "Mom, the light's back on." I looked at my kids and I said, "Did one of you guys go back there?" I know they didn't. And I thought I would ask, but they said no. I told my son to go turn it off. And when he was walking back, there he came back running. He said, "Mom, there's a man back there." I said, "What?" He repeated, "There's a man back there." I got up and went in there, and no one was there, but my back door was open. I got my kids and went to my sister's, and she was next door to me. And we called the police, and they came and looked the place over, but he said no one could have come in the back door. But he would stay with my sister and tell my husband when he got home. And after that, things would happen around the house, and we would put things down and go back to get it, and it was moved. My son liked his bedroom room door open, but it would close when no one was in there. My sister came, and she said, "You all have got a spirit in your home." And I said, "Yeah, more than one." Well, we lived there for a while, and my kids didn't like to sleep in their rooms, and their friends would not come over and stay with us, and They would get up at 2 a.m. crying, and they called for their mom or dad to come get them, and whatever it was, it never hurt any of us. But we did move out. I don't blame you. That's not a very comforting environment. Again, it's not a harmful haunting, but it's definitely something trying to be noticed. A lot of times, hauntings aren't physical. They're not even dangerous in the most part, for the most part. But I think that those spirits just want to be acknowledged. They want to be recognized. And again, there's no saying why that is. But maybe it's just the idea that they feel alone and they want to reach out and be noticed. But anyway, I don't blame them for moving. You know, it's got to be tough, especially with their kids. You don't want to mess around with anything in the paranormal when there's children involved. It's just, I don't know. There's just too many variables there that are just not good. Just not good. So the next one I'm going to read you is coming out of the state of Tennessee. Excuse me. Says, I'm a 50-year-old sober, drug-free grandmother. My sanity has never been questioned, not to my face anyway. My folks settled in their foothills of Cumberland Mountains of Tennessee, and we have what might be described as a very country way of speaking. Ghosts or haunts are called haints to us. Around here, the word such is sometimes pronounced sitch. One winter night when I was about 7 years old, I was at my aunt's house, and the adults were in the living room sitting around the fireplace talking, and we kids, my brother, our cousins, and I, were scampering all over the house playing hide-and-seek and raising the occasional ruckus and generally just having fun. I was hiding in an old wardrobe when I noticed that the grown-ups had lowered their voices. I jumped out of the wardrobe and, for optimum listening purposes, and scuttled behind a bedroom door. They were telling ghost stories. One particularly chilling story involved an abandoned house. And it was said that in this house, at a certain time of the year, one could hear a baby crying just before midnight. Then, on the stroke of the hour itself, a coffin containing a baby would appear in the parlor. That's horrible. Eesh. I marched into the living room and, "Is that true?" I demanded. "About the baby in the casket?" The grown-ups sat there a moment looking at each other, and then Auntie reached for my hand and pulled me over to stand beside her chair. "Honey, we're just sitting around telling a bunch of old stories, just passing the time is all," she said. "Now, some parts you heard might be true." And before I had time to wonder which part she was talking about, Auntie, looking me straight in the eye, declared, "But there ain't no sitch thing as a haint." Again, haint is a haunt and the sitch is such. So I took her words to heart, and they echoed authoritatively throughout several decades of my life. Many of my childhood friends believed in ghosts. They wouldn't go near a cemetery unless they had to, fearing a haint would get them if they did, and smugly secure in my belief that there ain't no sitch thing as a haint. I took shortcuts through the graveyards whenever it was convenient, day or night. Later on, when my daughter wanted a Ouija board, I got her one. There ain't no sitch thing as a haint, so why shouldn't she have one of those Ouija boards to play with? Oh, good Lord. For some 40-odd years, I lived a happy, haint-free life, but not anymore. I recently worked for a gentleman who sold repossessed mobile homes, and on the lot one morning, Bill, a coworker, called me on the radio and summoned me to number 087, a newly arrived double wide, and I climbed up inside it and, "Bill, you in here?" "In the master bath," came Bill's reply. He was standing in front of the tub with a sour look on his face. I walked in, then backed right out. The bathroom stank to high heaven. There were mounds of dead flies on the windowsill and on the floor behind the toilet. "Where's it coming from?" I asked. Bill shook his head. "I don't know, but we'll have to find out. Ain't nobody going to buy a trailer with a bathroom that stinks like this." Over the next several days, Bill and I, along with three others, worked on number 087. We searched high and low for the source of that stench. We removed wall panels and examined the hidden interior room that housed the furnace and the water heater. We poked between the floor, between the vapor barrier and the flooring. We flushed the drain taps. At one point, in fits of desperation, we even peeled back the bathroom carpet and padding, and we found no evidence of any leaks, no dead vermin, nothing. In the house, or in the course of these events, we noticed some odd things about the order. For one thing, it was sporadic. Whenever it showed up, piles of dead flies showed up with it. The smell would dissipate, but the flies stayed behind. We had to suck them up with a hand vac, and also the odor was strong, almost overpowering, inside the bathroom. One step outside the bathroom door, though, and the smell was undetectable. Now, I've watched the same movies everyone else has watched, and I know that, confronted with this same circumstances, a lot of people would have been immediately clued into some sort of spook that was, and these are the words of the story, ladies and gentlemen, so forgive me, but it was some sort of spook that was fiddle-farting around. Now, I thought, ain't no such thing as a haint. As a matter of fact, one of the guys did say something about number 087 being possessed. Instead of repossessed. But he was joking. And as far as I know, that's the only allusion to the supernatural that any of us had made. Excuse me. We opened windows, we sprayed disinfectant, we set out all air fresheners, and we burned scented candles and incense, and if it smelled good, we tried it. And finally 3 days passed, and no order presenting itself, and we thought that we'd finally cured it. And maybe we did. On a hot, very busy day in September, I climbed up inside 087 to get started on the final job that had to be done before the home would be ready to sell. A sheet of drywall in the dining area needed to be replaced, and I was measuring the wall when the toilet in the master bathroom flushed. I nearly lost my religion right then and there. Here I was in a sweltering, airless trailer, sweat pouring off of me, and some idiot, probably a prospective buyer, had just used the toilet that wasn't hooked up to a sewage system. It was not unusual for these used mobile homes to arrive on the lot with enough water for a flush retained in their lavatory tanks, and despite taped-down lids and do-not-use signs, sometimes people did avail themselves of the facilities. I dropped my tape measure and went stomping off towards the bathroom, and on the way down the warpath, it didn't dawn on me that until I had entered, the trailer had been locked. The bathroom door was standing wide open. The pig hadn't even bothered to close it. He was standing right there in front of the throne, hitching up his pants with his right side facing me. He was tall, he had a beer belly, and a mob of tangled red hair. And he had on jeans and a gray muscle shirt that looked as if it had seldom seen the inside of a washing machine. His pudgy arms were covered in jailhouse tattoos, and one that was a pair of dice rolled to snake eyes, and I remember wondering why he hadn't opted for boxcars. Attached to his belt, there was a leather sheath with what appeared to be a 6-inch boot knife in it. Sir? He went from pig to sir in the span of a heartbeat. A sight like that will just naturally take the wind out of your sails. Judging from the look on his face, he was surprised to see me, which was puzzling because he had to have heard my approach, and as we stared at each other, his expression changed, becoming sullen. I perceived a threat, and he lowered his head slightly, still watching me. His right hand reached for that blade, then he clicked it off. He just wasn't there anymore. It made me dizzy. Either I had just witnessed a ghost, or I had a horribly defective mind. You didn't even wash your hands. I said that out loud, hastily departed, and took a break outside, wondering how I was going to get that Ouija board away from my daughter. I decided to do what all parents do whenever a child acquires something she's better off without. I'd buy something bigger, better, and more expensive and attempt to negotiate a trade. I thought about my childhood jaunts through the local cemeteries. No telling what kind of boogers had been lurking in the shadows back then, just waiting to pounce on my unsuspecting self. I saw the apparition only once, and I never smelled the foul odor again. The last time I was inside number 087, the whole trailer smelled like coconut. Thanks to our dedicated freshening efforts. Excuse me again. Shortly after this happened, my employer had a heart attack, not haint-related as far as I know. Resulting health issues forced him to sell his inventory, including number 087, to other dealers around the region, and it's an attractive mobile home, so it's reasonable to assume someone has bought it by now. It's a 96 model 28x48 with three bedrooms and two baths, and it has beige siding. All the front windows, including a large and very lovely bay window, are trimmed with red shutters, and there's a rectangular skylight in the kitchen. The ceiling in the dining area has a frame mirror with a swag light dangling from it. An identical mirror sans light is mounted on the wall behind the pastel yellow garden tub in the master bath. If this sounds like your home, you might want to arm yourself before going to the bathroom, or at least knock before you go in, because there is such a thing as a haint, and you just might be living with one. It's a well-written story. I don't know. Like I told you guys before, the more well-written they are, the more it's like, is that just a creative author there? I don't know. But then again, with the paranormal, anything's possible. I don't know. Whatever the case may be, I hope he got that Ouija board away from his daughter. That is not for kids. I don't know what the hell they're thinking, ages 8 and up. Go to your room and you summon Grandpa and tell him what you did. Not a good choice. Not a good choice at all. The next one I'm going to read to you is from South Dakota. We're marching all over the nation here. And this one's pretty short. Excuse me. Yeah, we're moving along at a good pace tonight. Just seeing how many of you are here. Good job. All right. I guess there's a lot of not football fans tonight. That's good. Okay, so this is South Dakota. First of all, I got to tell you, this story is not totally mine. I'm a member of a ghost hunting group out of South Dakota, and one of my group members' son had this experience in this old house, in his old house, rather. He's a young, probably about 7 or 8 at the time, and he'd often wake up in the night and see a shadow person in his room, as well as the figure of a woman. She was golden color and hooded, and his mother just shrugged it off as him still being half asleep, and she told him that he should just ignore it. A while later, while out at a ghost hunting conference, she met up with someone who was publishing a book about shadow people, and everything she said about them fit exactly with what her son had told her. She decided to take him seriously after that, and she researched the Golden Lady as much as she could, but she came up with nothing. I myself have looked into it extensively and still have gotten nothing either. She left a message on a ghost hunting forum about it, and the response she got was, "It is really bad," but they refuse to elaborate on it. I've seen pictures here and there. I've seen pictures here about a golden lady, and I'm wondering if anyone can tell me exactly what she is. I'd love to go back to that house and investigate if she's a malcontent spirit. Can anyone help me out? And again, the story's from 2007, so unfortunately, if you know what a golden lady is, I don't know if this person's still wondering or not, but... you got to believe the kids, ladies and gentlemen. And it's something I harp on a lot about the show, but I mean, I do believe children can see these things so much more than we can. And I believe that they need, understanding parents to help them process this stuff. I'm redundant when I say this over and over, but I know that parents have good intentions. It's like, no, there's nothing under your bed. It's just your imagination. Go back to your room, go to sleep. And you're just telling your child not to trust what they're experiencing, not to trust that inner vision or that second sight or that extra sense that they're perceiving these things with. And so you're shutting them down, or people are shutting them down when they do that. So, it's just really important to be understanding and listen and try to help them process it, because children look up to their parents. I mean, parents are everything. They are the morning and the night, the light and the dark. I mean, they are everything. They are the heroes of the small child. And when those heroes shut the door and just tell the child they're being ridiculous, it's really a damaging thing. And several of our regular listeners have talked about their experiences with that and all of the problems that it caused and all of the torment they had to go through after that alone because they couldn't talk to their parents about it. But it doesn't mean that the sightings quit. They didn't stop seeing things. They just stopped being able to talk about it. So then they're alone. So always listen to your children. Give them the benefit of the doubt. Help them understand. Help them understand. So, again, my soapbox. And I'm sorry for our all our regular listeners. I know I've said that a ton of times, and I don't mean to just keep beating the same drum, but there's nothing more important than our children. They are just everything. They are the future. So let's get to the next one. The next one is coming out of the great state of California, ladies and gentlemen. Let's see what's going on in California. I work at Camp Roberts in California, and there's a base there that was built in the 40s and used for basic training. The base was built in a matter of weeks and still stands to this day. On this base, there used to be a full functioning hospital in the 200 to 300 block. 9 buildings still stand from that grand hospital. 8 of the 9 are in a locked, gated area. And these buildings take about 2 minutes to walk from one side of the building to the other. The buildings were at one time connected by a covered wooden walkways that have since been taken down. Only one still shows evidence of these walkways, and that's building 308. They took out the walkway and made steps and put in a soda machines on the old platform. Next to building 308 is, to its left, is building 307. Behind building 308 is building 315, and behind 307 is building 305. Diagonally from the back of building 307, about 50 feet, is building 303. Next to 303 is building 304. So now you have an idea of the layout. I guess that's important. All the buildings have entrances on the end of the buildings, and only in buildings 303 and 304 is the building not built like one giant hallway. One night, as always, my coworker and I had to lock up, but on this night we worked late and it was already dark, and we had to go to each building and make sure that both doors were locked, and I had building 307 and 305, and he took 308 and 315, and I locked up 305 first and went on to 307. When I entered what we call the center of the compound after locking 307, I saw him on the platform of building 308 heading towards 315. I went towards building 308 to tell him to hurry up. Mind you, building 307 and 305 is like 20 feet from each other, and he disappeared from my view behind the soda machines. I walked up the platform, and nobody was there. There is all but open space, and you would be able to see anyone get down the other set of stairs, and I ran over to building 315 to see him walking back from the other end of the building, and that's when I realized that the person I saw wasn't him, and there was no way that anyone else could be in the compound. It's gated and locked. When he walked out of the building, he looked at me and asked what was wrong, and I told him that we needed to leave now. As we walked back, I told him what had happened, and he laughed at me. We worked there for 6 months, and nothing has ever happened like that before. We started to turn off the lights to building 303, since that was the last building left to lock up, and he clicked off the light switch to one set of lights that has only one switch, walked to the other wall to turn off the other half of the lights, and the switch to the other set of lights turned back on. I looked at him and said, "Told you so, let's go." He ran to the other side of the building to turn off the set of lights, and that just turned on, and we ran out of the building. Our boss doesn't believe that those buildings or any other on Camp Roberts is haunted, but me and my coworker think that's why our boss always goes home before dark. I found out after telling the story to one of the guys in our base that have been here forever that the hospital was full of people from the war and that they were there to recuperate from war injuries or diseases they caught. Boot camp trainees and Italian POWs housed at Camp Roberts. The 300 block was the death prep area. Ooh. Yeah, that's just it. If you want to find haunted locations, look at old prisons and old hospitals. Lots of pain, lots of misery, and that just seems to be a beacon for a lot of activity. Those buildings never forget. They always remember, and they always hold things. And maybe some things just refuse to move on. So let's get to the next one. This one, I don't know, this one sounds kind of sad, but it talks about a spirit of a little boy. So this comes out of Texas. Now, I've always had an interest in the supernatural, but really was a skeptic. My story might not be as scary or even scary at all, but to me, it was something I would never like to experience. I lived in Austin, Texas, and was staying in an apartment complex that used to be a school for the disabled. I would always hear a ball bouncing and a dining table chair flip moving in the kitchen. Excuse me. When I would approach that area, it would stop and move to a different area in the kitchen. The noise continued happening. I just ignored it, but there was an incident when I was taking a nap and I felt someone lay down next to me. I turned around to see who it was, and I saw absolutely nothing. Just an indentation in the mattress. I was so scared, I got up and ran to my mother's bedroom and told her about it. She believed me and told me the same thing has happened to her. A couple of nights later, I was sleeping in my bedroom. In my bedroom, there was a bathroom that connects, and I had the light on while I slept because at this point, I was scared out of my mind, and all of a sudden, I woke up with the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. I was sleeping on my stomach, my face was turned towards the wall, and the pain I felt was in my back. It felt as if someone was trying to get up from my back, and it felt like somebody was trying to get up from my back, and it was. That's the whole sentence. I don't understand that, but my whole body was paralyzed. I just couldn't move. I was screaming on the inside, but nothing was coming out. I could see something on me, like a glowing light. My brother was sleeping in the living room at that time, and I was thinking, if only my scream would wake him. Then he would come in here and help me, but nothing. The ghost kept trying to get up from my body, and more he tried, the more and more it hurt. Finally, he arose, and I was able to move. I turned around on my bed and looked and saw him. The ghost was a little boy, dressed in white. He had a bowl haircut, like back in the old days, and he looked and smiled and disappeared. As soon as he did, I ran into the living room and woke up my brother, and of course, he thought I was dreaming. There's no way I was dreaming that. Now, I know who was moving the chairs and bouncing the ball in the kitchen, and who was laying next to me in bed. Yeah, that's terribly creepy. All right, this one is pretty short, and this one's coming out of North Carolina. It says, this story happened to me about 2 summers ago in North Carolina, and again, this is from 2007, so this archive that I found is a little bit old, but they're still valid. Ghost stories don't change that much. Man. I was on vacation and staying in a small house on a beach, and I was sharing a bedroom with my older brother since the third room was a small, very dark, and downright creepy. And I was sleeping on top bunk with my brother, and my brother was in a normal bed on the floor. And early in the morning, I woke up and looked at the mirror on the wall across from me, and there I saw a tall man, just a shadow, no face visible, standing. He was wearing an old-fashioned hat. I looked at the floor, suspecting my brother of a trick of the eye or something, but there was no one. I almost died. One afternoon when we got back from the beach, I was taking a shower, and then as I was looking through the space where the curtain doesn't shut all the way, a large black shadow passed through the room, and I got out of there fast. No one saw anything, but my mom said she got the feeling someone was watching her late one night. I never wanted to go back there again. By the way, we stayed near Blackbeard's house. So we went on the tour, which was really creepy, and the stories they told in front of the graveyard were so scary. These are the only ghost experience I've ever had happen to me. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's, again, shadow people sound really creepy, but a lot of times they don't really do much of anything. They're just there. Just apparitions. So, I guess if you see a shadow person and that's all you see, that's a good thing. Now, if it gets ugly and dark and you get bad moods and bad feelings and stuff, then you might have a problem. And that's that feeling of being watched, I really think there's something to that. That's like an indicator that I think we all, you know, there's many indicators for this, but I think we all are sensitive. I think we all have that latent psychic ability in us, because we all always seem to know when we're being watched. And I don't know how to explain that. I mean, how could we know? But we always get that feeling. It feels like a weight. It feels like a creepy feeling when someone is unseen, but they're watching you. And it's a great thing that we have it, I guess. You know, it's one of those things that maybe it's a defense mechanism of some kind. But, I think it's really cool that people do, you know, have that ability. Now, is it an indicator of paranormal? Yeah, I think it is. Or not of a paranormal, but of a psychic ability. Is that the first indicator of a second sight that could be developed if you worked on, if you meditated, if you, you know, worked on developing those gifts? Because I think they're in all of us. These gifts are not, they're not just given to a lucky few and the rest of us can just marvel at what they can do. I think it's in all of us, but some people are just born more naturally aware of those other senses that the rest of us have to work really hard to try to find. But, you know, I think there's really something to that. And that is one of those universal things that everybody experiences, but nobody can really quite explain it. Is it a subconscious awareness? Like maybe you actually subconsciously saw somebody and then you have in your mind that they're there? I don't think so. I don't think that's the reason for it. I think it is truly an energy thing. Like people know when somebody is watching because there's an energy to that. That's a, you know, it's like, how do I explain this? If somebody's talking to you, you know they're talking to you. And yes, they're giving you words to make you understand that they're talking to you, but they're giving you a look that tells you they're talking to you. But there's also an energy that goes along with that of a connection. And I think that feeling of somebody watching you is also a connection of sorts. They are observing you, so therefore they are sending you an energy, and you are perceiving that, and that's I think what is going on, but I can't be sure. It's just all theories, but I believe there's something to that. Okay, so the next one is, this is coming from the Alamo, Texas, ladies and gentlemen. We're going back to Texas. Some years ago, I was at the Alamo visiting there, and the Long Barracks lives up to its name. It's long, narrow building with an entrances at each end, and has been converted into an extension of the museum, with display cases along each wall. It wasn't crowded that day. A loose line of people moved down one side and up on the other, and I was about 30 feet from the front entrance when I looked up to see a man walking towards me in the lines, and he was dressed in period costume, rust-colored pants tucked into black boots, a brown belt with a plain brass buckle, and a white shirt that had a pointed collar with undone string ties dangling down on either side of the front placket. The shirt did not have proper cuffs. Instead, a button pleat fastened the sleeves on the wrists. He was about 6 feet tall, dark blonde hair that curled down towards his collar, and his face was weathered and tan, and although I couldn't see them well, I believe his eyes were blue. But the most striking thing about him was that he was carrying what looked to be a Sharps Buffalo rifle. He was holding it properly, the forestock in his left hand and the muzzle pointed safely towards the floor. The rear vernier sight was folded down. I watched him carefully until he was so close to me that staring would have been rude. I looked down, felt him go by me, and saw his shadow pass, and then when I looked up, he was gone. He was so tall and the crowd was so sparse that I could not have lost him in the people around me, and it was so far to the door that he could not have just crossed that distance during the brief time that I looked away from him. He simply disappeared. I'm fairly certain he was among the Alamo heroes who fell to Santa Ana's army, but to this day, I wish I knew which one. Wow. That's very powerful. History is alive, ladies and gentlemen. Now, was that a residual thing? Again, residual haunts versus intelligent haunts. Residual is just a energy impression that's impressed into a space and can replay at random. Or maybe there's a triggering event that we don't know, but it's just like watching a movie. The movie characters aren't aware of you watching them. They're just doing their thing. And so residual haunts are much the same. They are just a record of some energetic event that had happened, and, you know, they replay from time to time. Or was that apparition an intelligent haunt just going, we're still here. I want you to see me. I want you to see us, that we're still here. We're still a part of this history. We are the living history of this place. And, you know, I don't know. He didn't ever mention that the guy made eye contact in his little story, so it's hard to know. But if he had made eye contact, I would lean towards it being an intelligent haunt. But in residual haunts, I mean, they can appear right there in three dimensions, but they don't really have any consciousness as, you know, as a person anymore. It's just an event replaying. So I don't know. That one's hard to say, but it sounds more residual to me just from the basis of the story. I mean, if the guy had looked at him and winked and then, you know, kept going and disappeared, then it's intelligent. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here of the Paranormal Portal Podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. I'm a big fan of Bigfoot. I'm extraordinarily curious about the Dogman, and those are two of the more well-known and widely discussed of the cryptids that are out there. They are these creatures that are extraordinarily large, move unbelievably fast. They are just adept and comfortable in the most rugged of wilds, and they seem to excel in our absence. Let's get into a few of these tonight, ladies and gentlemen. We'll talk about some accounts and some encounters and see what people are reported seeing. The first one is, I saw something that looked like a humanoid. It was in the woods just outside my childhood home. This is rural northern Wisconsin, and if you've ever been to rural northern Wisconsin, you'll know it's really pretty rugged and very lightly populated throughout the majority of it. But it's not hard to believe that there could be a lot of things up there that haven't been discovered. So this person was about 14. Up until that day, I had absolutely no fear of the woods. I spent most of my time out there exploring and being afraid of absolutely nothing. My parents had a terrible marriage and fought all the time, and I felt more at home outside than in the house. On really hot nights, I'd take a sleeping bag and sleep on the roof of an old shack on our property. I saw bears, I saw wolves, and they were always more afraid of me than I was of them. I didn't really believe in anything like ghosts or Bigfoot or demons or even God. I only got lost out there once when dark fell sooner than I had expected, and I stayed calm and found the North Star, and I knew that if I continued south, I'd eventually come across the old railroad tracks near my house. Even the thought of spending the night out there didn't bother me in the least. The thought of Mom's rage when I didn't come home, however, terrified me. So it was summer, and I just turned 14 years old. My mom had left my dad. Dad worked all the time, and my sister was living on her own. And once school was out, it was literally just me and my cat, and this is way before the internet or any kind of smartphones. We lived on a dead-end dirt road, and about noon, I took my everyday stroll down the long driveway to check the mail. My cat followed me everywhere, and I kind of relied on him to give me a heads up if there was anything around, like a bear or some other animal close by. A bit of movement behind me as I stood at the mailbox made me realize that something was across the road in the trees. But there were always these deer all over the place, and so I didn't think much of it. I heard a loud crash, and then it sounded like something very loudly pushing its way through the brush. It's like every horror movie. My brain had no capability for the thought of anything being paranormal or spooky, and I simply tucked the mail under my arm and went into the woods to check it out. My cat followed close behind. I got about 10 yards in when I noticed what I hadn't noticed before. It was absolutely dead quiet. There was no noise. Nothing. It was a beautiful day in about the middle of June, and there wasn't a single bird singing, no insect noise, no leaves blowing around. It was deadly silent. At the same time I realized it, the silence, I got an eerie feeling that something was watching me. I stopped absolutely still and started scanning the woods for deer. Hunters know what I'm talking about when I say you look for the shape of a deer instead of trying to look for their color. And that's when I spotted it. Two furry brown legs, and the top of it concealed by the tree that it was standing in. I went to sigh with relief when my cat absolutely hissed. I looked down and he was absolutely poofed out with his back arched, looking at the same thing I was. I looked back and the legs moved. Not a deer. Like a human. Everything happened all at once after that. I dropped the mail, picked up the cat by his neck, and ran for it. Whoever was out there with me was running after me. I never ran so fast in my entire life. I flew up the driveway and into the house and slammed and locked the doors, and I grabbed the phone. I called the neighbor, who is a ex-chief of police, and he came over immediately with his pistol. He checked out the spot I was in and found nothing. I was so hysterical, I was in tears. And he stayed there with me until I was able to get a hold of my mom and have her come get me. Of course, they thought I was on drugs or delusional. I know exactly what I saw and felt. It was broad daylight, and I never felt safe in those woods again. And never slept outside either. So that to me sounds like a pretty typical Sasquatch kind of experience. Not that it couldn't be a dogman or some other cryptid, but the silence in the woods is something I've experienced a few times. And I'm not claiming that silence in the woods would indicate a Sasquatch. Certainly not, but the nature seems to know when there's a high tension, when there's a high energy. Nature seems to know, from the bugs to the birds to everything. And I've experienced when a forest goes dead quiet and you hear every little thing and all the sound just suddenly gets magnified, and it's this intense feeling because you don't really know why it's quiet. You just know that something's not right. And then to feel that the weight of something looking at you as well would have to be extraordinarily terrifying. So a very intense experience, but again, the person didn't get hurt, but it must have been in that moment, I'm sure that what he or she felt was just like, am I going to die? So very cool story. Now the next one I'm going to read to you is one of those that seems to defy explanation. And, you know, we, of course, being interested in the paranormal, you've got to have an open mind. But sometimes there's some claims that are hard to grasp utilizing your normal methodology of observing the world. I mean, some things seem, you know, like they're plausible, like that makes sense that could happen. And other things just stretch our imagination beyond what we believe is even conceivable. And this is one of those stories, but I would like to add that there are many legends of this kind of story, of this kind of tale, in a lot of First Nations. So the idea of things changing is not an absolutely foreign or unheard of idea. It's just hard for most of us with a Western mindset to grasp the possibilities that are out there. Is it possible? I suppose it is, but sometimes it's hard for it to seem plausible. So, again, thank you to all of you that are in here. That's wonderful. So this one is, I was a baby when this incident happened, but it happened to my sister, who was about 5 years old at the time. My cousins, aunts, and uncles were at a birthday party one Saturday at my grandmother's house in Houston. All the adults were in the house around dusk, but the older cousins, ranging from about 4 to 8, and my sister were outside playing. My sister isn't sure who noticed the bird in the tree first, but soon all the cousins noticed it as well. The bird was perched on one of the lower branches, just staring at them. Before their horrified eyes, the bird began transforming until it was a woman. A woman sitting in the branch, leering at them. As they began shouting and screaming for their parents, the woman became a bird again, and by this time, the parents had come out to investigate the commotion, but the bird wouldn't budge. Not until my grandmother, a formidable and salt-of-the-earth type of woman, went outside, did the bird fly off. The house is creepy. It's still in our family, and I've had some other strange things happen there, as did my mom, and it's been in the family since my parents were young teens. My cousin owns it now and is still creepy and old, and he doesn't really like living in the little yellow house either. But in the beautiful roses my grandmother planted, strange things have been found. Animal bones, guts, melted candles, and other witchcraft type of things. A lady in white has been seen moving from room to room in the past by guests of the house. Now, I think that's a story that we've shared on the show before, but it just, even though I realized that part of the way through, it's still a really magnificent example of somebody witnessing something that just defies explanation. Like, how can a person become another form entirely? How can a full-grown person become a bird? How could a full-grown person become a deer, become an elk, become a bear? You know, in a lot of Native American First Nations stories and legends, those kind of things are not uncommon at all. Then, of course, you hear things about the skinwalkers and such. So these ideas are out there and have been out there for hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years. So is it possible? I believe it is. I don't understand the mechanics of it. I don't understand what has to take place for this to happen. But to sit on any kind of intellectual high ground and say, well, that's not possible, I think excludes yourself from imagining possibilities of the dynamic nature of reality. And so I think you have to embrace it all as potential. And, you know, understanding how, I understand that that's going to be incredibly tough for most of us to get our heads around, but I don't think it's wise to dismiss possibility either. So I'm just, you know, it's just my opinion. Some of you out there may be going, whatever, dude, that's just wacky. And I understand that too, but just saying, got to keep an open mind. If you can believe that beings can travel, you know, millions of light years to visit us, if they can control people's minds, if they can abduct, if there can be tall, hairy, gorilla-type creatures running around and stalking people, if there can be once-living people that are deceased that, you know, can still interact with our world, and other spiritual beings, if there can be a devil, if there can be angels, if there can be a god, then you have to understand that the realm of what's possible is suddenly pretty huge. So the next one I thought was pretty cool was another one that really stretches the imagination. And it's this is the last story, of course, is it's a tough one for a lot of people, but it's not unheard of. This one is one of those that I can't ever remember hearing anything like this before, unless we've shared it on the show, which is possible. But here it goes. So I used to live in Vancouver, Washington, on a cul-de-sac, Orchard Del Court. It was a T-shaped cul-de-sac with another road off the side to another T, or to the T. So I was heading to school about 8 in the morning. I only had to walk about a block from my house to where a cul-de-sac meets the main road, St. James Road, and this is your typical everyday route that I took. However, that morning was different. When I got close to St. James, I looked up from my feet, and across the road was what I can only describe as a being, a creature. It was made up entirely of black spheres. In the shape of a man, it definitely had two legs, two arms, a torso, and a head. But again, all made up of black spheres about a foot wide, a little bigger than a basketball, and all the spheres seemed to have a texture to them that I had never seen before. That's creepy enough, but it was dancing around a pole across the street. The thing is, and that's really hard to convey, is that this thing projected nothing but pure malevolence. I felt that this thing was completely evil. Really, really evil. And I would say it was evil. I would not say it was just evil. It was just really evil or dark. It's like the difference between saying a man can be evil, but a man can also be good. This thing could not have had the possibility of being good. There was just no way. It was just bad. Anyways, when I looked at it, it stopped dancing, looked at me, and just popped out of existence. It didn't fade. It didn't make any sound. It was just there one moment, and the next moment, it was completely gone. I was incredibly freaked out, but it's not like I was hurt or felt bad. I was just completely freaked out. Anyways, I just went to school like normal, if not a little shaken. Well, that night there were some kids racing cars drunk, and there were 4 or 5 people killed. The driver and all the passengers all died instantly. And when I went out there with my father to the corner where it happened, I was absolutely shocked because it was the exact same intersection where I saw that thing the previous morning. I can't help but think I saw something strange that morning, something I wasn't supposed to see. Whatever that creature was, it was completely bad news. And that's a really cool story. Again, is it just a kind of a random manifestation? I do believe that spiritual beings can probably choose how they want to be seen. And perhaps sometimes they just choose to look completely foreign. I don't know. Very strange, though. This is a story that happened to my mom. When she and my aunt were young, they were playing with some neighborhood kids in the woods across the street from the house they lived in, and she claims that they heard a noise from above them, looked up and saw something crouching in the branches of the trees. She said it was humanoid, about 7 to 8 feet tall, completely covered in fur, and as soon as it noticed them, it leaped down from the tree and sprinted further into the woods. Of course, they were all absolutely terrified, and they ran back to their house. They never saw it again, but both my mom and my aunt swear that this actually happened. And again, that doesn't sound too far out. There's a lot of encounters with Sasquatch that mirror that same modality. Like, as Bear says when he's on the show, like, we are their entertainment. We are what they do for entertainment. Like, when they're bored just looking at sticks and rocks and stuff, I guess they like to come check out and see what we're doing. And when you think about it, wouldn't you? I mean, we love to escape to the wilderness. To us, it's a recharging experience because it just lets everything melt away. We just get that natural vibe and we feel refreshed. But imagine living in that every day for years. And yet you see and hear and are aware of these sights, sounds, and smells of this really foreign nature. And so it's intriguing. If they have an intelligence at all, which I believe they do, it makes perfect sense that they would want to come and see what we're doing. Because we are their television, as Bear says. We are what they do for entertainment. They watch us. They observe, and perhaps they even learn quite a bit just by sitting there watching us. So I'm sure that this thing was probably watching these children play, and it was probably enjoying watching that. It was entertaining. And then once the children realized it was there, it was like, uh-oh, they saw me. Shoot, I got to go. You know, for whatever reason, these beings choose our absence. They choose not to be interacting and involved with us at all. But I still think their curiosity gets the better of them, and that's perhaps why we have sightings at all, is because they are curious, and they probably get into situations like, oh, shoot, you know, they did see me. And then they have to retreat back to their natural place. There's other examples of them being seen, and they just kind of glance and go, yeah, whatever, and they continue on their way. And if you were 9 or 10 feet tall and, you know, the size of the Incredible Hulk, I can't imagine you'd be too intimidated by a little, a little wee little thing. So it's probably just like, yeah, whatever. What are you going to do about it? So very cool experiences. Those are the tales that I want to cover with you guys tonight. And I hope you guys are enjoying these with some thoughts, with some ideas, with some theories and philosophy behind it. So, ladies and gentlemen, I think that's going to wrap up our show for tonight. I hope you've enjoyed these jaunts into the world of the paranormal. Thank you all for being here and being a part of the shows, and I love you all very much. You guys are amazing, so be good, be kind, be nice to each other, take care of each other, and I love you guys. Take care, everybody.
sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.